Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us and tuning into this week's Football Fans Podcast Euro 2016 special.
It's the same reason why they came out of the European Union. It's this entitlement and arrogance. They're just assumption that they are better and that they are one of the great nations, regardless of never having the receipts.
Don't start trying to be like Pochettino. Oh, well, Pochettino, he changes his fullbacks every once in a while, so I'm going to do the same. No, Roy, you're not Pochettino.
It's a prerequisite, as far as I'm concerned, just because so many of the great players have one of those titles. You look at man like Zidane, got everything. You know, you got the guys like Pele, got everything.
This week, I'm joined on my panel by a Spurs fan, Ollie, Arsenal supporter Simeon, and our Liverpool fan, Marcus. Everybody good, gentlemen? Everyone good? Everyone good?
Yep.
All good here?
All good,
yeah. Okay, we're all good. I was going to ask for your general thoughts on the Euro so far, but I'm going to wait until we get to our second talking point, because I don't want anybody to give away their thoughts too much on what their general thoughts on the tournament are so far. Let's start with England. Obviously, England are out, and I think that the fallout is still going on, even a couple of days after that has happened. I'm going to give my very brief thoughts, and then I want to hear from you guys, and I've got some questions for all of you. Biggest embarrassment for me of my lifetime, England football team. I thought it was an absolute sham what happened against Iceland. I believe the team, personnel-wise, actually is good enough to compete and be contenders at this tournament. I think the personnel was adequate enough to go further than they did. So it's a huge failure, in my opinion. I'm not a diehard England fan, but I wanted England to do quite well. I did kind of want them to do well at this tournament. Just a few people I want to go through. Analysis. Joe Hart has proven himself for me to not be world-class, and that debate from other people about him being in the top bracket of what world-class goalkeepers needs to be off the table now. Danny Rose, I think when Luke Shaw returns, I don't think we'll see him ever again. Good, decent, okay left back, but I think Luke Shaw will be... I think he'll be gone.
Ever again, though?
I don't think
squad.
For England... I don't know.
Squad,
I don't think he will, personally. I think he'll be gone. I think he'll be gone. Walker was...
So who will be in front of him then? Seeing as he played all the matches, what, is Bertrand going to be in front of him?
Yes. I think he'll be Shaw's number two.
Yeah, but why?
I think in my view, Bertrand is a better left back than Rose. I just think that Rose had a good 6 months. I think he had a really, really good season at Spurs. I don't think he's very, very good. I think he was part of a very, very good team. Kyle Walker, for me, the best player of the squad. And I thought I think he's pretty poor. So that says quite a bit. Smalling, I don't think he's as good as a lot of people make him out to be. But he's definitely improved. Cahill was part of an England team that finished bottom of the World Cup group and now knocked out by Iceland in the Euros. Average at best. Dyer had a good tournament, but nothing to do. Sterling, people know my views on Raheem Sterling. People keep saying that Raheem Sterling had a really, really poor tournament. He didn't have a really, really poor tournament. He's just poor. He's just poor. Yeah. He's just not very, very good.
Yeah, I thought you were meant to be chairing this thing
just,
here.
I'm just going through what I think, because I've got to get off my chest. I've been...
No.
Almost finished. Dele Alli completely blew his chance to announce himself on the main stage. Jack Wilshere clearly wasn't fit and shouldn't have gone, even though I thought he should have gone, but it's proven it was a mistake. Rooney was awful and should let down the country and his nation and should go. Daniel Sturridge needs to learn how to use his right foot. And Harry Kane was starved of service, I'll give him that, but for me he froze on the big stage. That's the mic dropped, right?
Yo,
we'll get on to Roy Hodgson a bit. Don't even start me on Roy Hodgson. Marcus,
yes,
who for you has to portion the majority of the blame? The Football Association, the football manager, or the football players?
I'll go with manager and players, to be honest. Because the Football Association, obviously, you know, they're in charge of who they're going to select as manager. But, you know, you got your pool to choose from. And at the end of the day, like, I think once you get to that pool that you're choosing from, the level of managers is, you know, the level of coaches you're going to get in are all relatively the same. So, and the players you're dealing with, they're international players. So I don't really feel like the Football Association have got that much role to play in that sense, in terms of the team performing. But nah, I blame Roy, because I still think he should have took Andros Townsend. I'm still mad about that. I think his squad selection, like choices like Jack Wilshere, what are you bringing him for? You know what I mean? Man did not play this season. He played like a couple of games, looked all right, but no. Like, if you was going to bring anyone, why would you leave Ross Barkley, who's played all season, hasn't been that great, but has actually played? Why would you bring him? And then
Drinkwater, I think, was the one there.
Drinkwater, man, won the league. Won the league. You don't see France looking at Kante like, oh, no, we don't really know who you are, bruv, so it's cool, chill. Nah, he's there. He's there. Man, like, Pogba will get left on the bench, not Kante. You know what I mean? Drinkwater now, he's just there watching the team like, really, though, Eric Dier is just going to be doing my job, yeah? Cool. And, yeah, I don't know, like, the squad selections, the way Roy switched it up for the different matches, it didn't make no sense. And the players, they just didn't perform. Harry Kane, they were saying he was tired, he was burnt out, but literally, he just wasn't making the runs. They were saying he weren't getting a service, but we had the ball all the time, right? Like, most of the matches, we had the ball. And if you are, like, when you're playing, yeah, if you're in the midfield or in defence and you got the ball all the time, you're looking for the strikers to create the space to create the goal scoring opportunities. And he was just static. That's why as soon as Sturridge came on, it looked like we had a bit of difference. And you saw the difference Rashford made just by, oh, look at me, I can run. He came on like, these Iceland men are not good at football. Give me the ball. And that's exactly what it looked like. And you're just like, oh my God, that's what it should be. Like, you lot are multi-millionaires. You're getting beaten by a man from that land of ice. No, I'm not having it.
But for you, Roy Hodgson has to portion the majority of the blame for their failing campaign.
Well, it definitely falls on the manager's head, because he's the one giving them the instructions. He's the one setting up the formation and he gets to select the squad. Like, bottom line, the players can train as hard as they want, but they don't even know if they're playing. He's the one who's got the big picture in it. You know what I mean? When you're, say, like, if you're playing a computer game or whatever, you're the one who sets up the team and all the rest of it. So when you play your friend now and it loses, you can't be looking at the you know, when you try to blame, oh, the character didn't animate right, he didn't do what I told him to press or right. No. Bottom line, you set it up. It's all, like, the failings are on you. But there were certain players that didn't perform. By the end of the day, we were all aware of that in the group stages. So as the manager, I don't care what you're seeing in training. Go by what you're seeing in the matches. Don't be putting Sterling in.
All right.
What are you? No.
Okay. Simeon, Marcus says Roy has to take the majority of the blame for the failed campaign. Agree?
100%. I mean, I don't understand how the scrutiny could be passed on to the FA. I mean, they've tried to scout every manager possible. They've had everybody in there. They've had money that they put into football is frankly embarrassing when you look at the fact that Iceland don't even have major professional football teams. And not only do we have a very rich league, but we have a rich FA who've put so much money into development, the facilities. It's frankly embarrassing. These players are overindulged. But I think
to cut you there, but isn't it necessarily not about, didn't Iceland prove it's not necessarily about how much money you have, it's about the guidance that you give
in. But this is my point. This is why I thought, like, the FA have done everything that they could possibly do, and they appointed a experienced manager who is not necessarily that decorated. And I think Roy Hodgson, for me, what I take away from it is at the end of the game, 15 minutes to go, 2-1 down, he was on the bench with his head in his hands. No ideas whatsoever. He had Sturridge on the right, who's left-footed, and he had Sterling on the left, who's right-footed. And so many times we needed a ball directly played into the box. One time, bang, and the player kept on cutting in every time because they didn't have the tools to do it. No sense of refit, no sense of crossing over, none of that. His lack of, I would say, even picking a squad that was on form. I mean, Drinkwater for me has a must. The guy has just won the league. The guy is a proven winner. The guy has shown that when I watched him play against Arsenal for Leicester, I was like, well, who's this baller? What, Drinkwater? Who? The guy is playing very, very well. And you bring Wilshere, who everybody knows when he gets injured, he takes a while to get back into form, and then he plays very well. But in a tournament, you don't have that kind of luxury. You've got to bring players who are on form. He didn't do that. Even Vardy, he was on form, but rarely played. And he wrote a very particular game. And I think Kane, I mean, decisions around Kane allowing him to take set pieces was just frankly bizarre. And they got progressively worse. And he recalled him. Lallana, who wasn't clinical, but actually was a very good player creatively, got dropped in a must-win game. I mean, I think Roy has been absolutely scandalous. And if you compare him now to Conte for Italy now, he is on the sidelines kicking every ball, putting in plans into operation. He's there. Mm. Roy went completely missing. And I think what's so funny is that when the competition was over, the day after he issued his statement, he was at a press conference again. He was like, "I don't know why I'm here." Mm. I mean, he's completely gormless.
We're going to come back to that.
Yeah.
First of all, Ollie, what was the single biggest factor of why England for you failed at this tournament?
Well, they can't score a goal, can they?
So the players
I think the players need to take some responsibility.
The majority. I'm trying to work out where people feel the majority of the blame lies.
You have to have the majority of the blame has to be with the manager, really, because, you know, he sets out the plan. And I can't really see what plan England had. I mean, the Slovakia game raised the alarm bells for me. The fact they couldn't break down Slovakia, just you had to worry about that, because you look at them and you think, they really are, for the last 20 minutes of that game, they look absolutely clueless. And then they started just taking shots from everywhere, you know, and they were just ridiculous shots as well. It wasn't even like, he's got a chance here, he's got to shoot. It was like, oh, I don't know what else to do. I'm 25 yards out, I'll just take a pot shot at goal. And it was just like, that is the mark of a team who have got no idea how to break sides down. England just didn't have, they didn't have the patience to work out how to find openings. And so many times you saw them dinking these balls into the area, you know, these chip balls into the area. Where were the actual balls that were actually played along the ground behind the defence, you know, for someone to run onto? They didn't do any of that. They didn't break teams down. They put balls in from wide positions that didn't trouble the defence whatsoever. This strikes me as a team who just didn't have a game plan. They didn't have a game plan of how they break teams down. So I look at, you have to say that first and foremost, it's down to the coaches, it's down to the manager to get the team to play to a certain way. You know, you look at the Iceland goal, the first Iceland goal. Have they not looked at the way Iceland scored goals? Have they not realised that they've got a long throw specialist and they got a goal from that, from playing that way? They got a goal earlier in the competition. Have they not worked that out? If you've not worked that out, then you shouldn't be in the competition as far as I'm concerned. I just think that there are certain, you know, obvious signs that you look at and you see where they've, you know, the Iceland's first goal, England caught completely. They've just gone to sleep. They've got the penalty, and then they've suddenly thought, all right, you know, we're in front. Right. And then they think it's a done deal. They've won the game. Now you look at the Germans got in front against Slovakia early.
Locked it off.
Mm. You know, they don't mess about. And this is a team that England could not break down. And within 10 minutes, Germany were in front. So there's something wrong there. There's something seriously wrong there.
Simeon referred to the press conference that Hodgson did the day after the defeat. And there were a couple of things that he and Martin Glenn, is he the chief executive, said that really, really worried me. Roy came out and said something, I'm just paraphrasing it slightly, but nothing prior to this game, Iceland game, made me think this result was coming. So he's basically saying that I didn't see anything in the three group games that made me believe that this could be coming.
Thing to say.
It was madness. Does anyone else think that was just like... The whole world can see that this result potentially was
coming. That's always the case with England, though. Everyone else can see it, but the manager, I swear that.
You know what it is with England? It's the same reason why they came out of the European Union. It's this entitlement and arrogance. They're just assumption that they are better and that they are one of the great nations, regardless of never having the receipts. Now, if you look at it, I mean, it was glaringly obvious that this was a very, I mean, it was a relatively easy group. If you consider it, it was a very, very easy group, and it was such a struggle to get through it. And I feel that even though they could say we made chance to get Russia, who've turned out to be one of the poorest sides in the whole championship, I feel that the fact that he could honestly say prior to the game, at some point we'll give somebody a beating, we didn't see this coming. When actually, for me, the players not only played the way they played throughout the tournament, but actually consistently throughout the past decade. Like, if you think about Rooney, Rooney hasn't had a good tournament since 2004. That was his breakthrough year when he was 18 years old. The guy's 30 years old now. He's had to replace his whole hairline. So I thought that if this is just repetition of what we see each tournament, and they can say we did not see this coming, That for me shows you the problem is management.
And what was even more worrying for me, Marcus, was then Martin Glenn came out and then said he sees this as progress under Roy Hodgson. He sees Roy Hodgson's time as progress for the team. And then a journalist said to him, "You came bottom of the first year. We give him a bligh because he came in quite haphazard after Capello left. So we give him a bligh on the first one. But the World Cup, they finished bottom of their group. They were out in 6 days.
Yeah, that's
in this group. You can't get past in this tournament. They can't get past the last 16 for an Iceland team. How is that progress? That's just the man in charge of English football.
They need to put it in context as well. Like you're talking about progress in a tournament where Northern Ireland escaped the group of death. Yeah, they was in a group with like Germany, Ukraine and Poland. Was it Poland? I think it was Poland. I'm not sure.
It was Poland.
And then Wales were in group and topped it and have gone further than us. And they got
lost to England and still managed to kind of get further.
It doesn't make it like when they got guys in their squad that play in like our first division and stuff. Do you know what I mean? No one in the first division will be allowed near the England team. Like that's what you got to put into context. Northern Ireland, man, they will bring out man from like low, like League Two. They got a man in like that in their team, and they're just playing and doing outdoing our millionaire. No,
I watched some of Northern Ireland's games and Republic, all the home nations actually. And the thing, especially with Northern Ireland, that really progress. Struck me was, I just like the fact that from the kickoff, you've got their main striker sprinting 25 yards close down their centre back, the right winger close sprinting to close. Just from the get-go, there's an intent, there's a hunger, and there's a plan to like, okay, we're not as good as you guys, but we're going to make you work for the win. If you beat us, you beat us. We're going to make you work. As a team, we're going to really, really make you work. From England, I just didn't see that. I didn't see that intensity, that team unity. I just saw a bunch of individual players, as you mentioned before, early lost, but just kind of pass. They couldn't make 5-yard passes in the second half of that Iceland game. Do you think that a big problem is the lack of team unity? And what I feel also, they're just pampered rich millionaires that win or lose, they know they're going to get rewarded in some way or another regardless.
I just think, you know, I just think Roy just tried to be too clever. I think he's, you look at the team, it's like there's no rhyme or reason to anything he was doing. You know what I mean? It's like Simeon was saying earlier, you know, he's dropped Lallana. Now, Lallana is not clinical enough, as Simeon was saying, but he was creating stuff. But then he brings back Sterling. Now, what's he seen? What has he seen that makes him think, you know what, Sterling's going to make a difference? Why bring him in? Why take Rashford to the Euros and then not use him? Because seriously, if he wasn't going to use Rashford, he might as well have taken Townsend or taken Drinkwater. You know what? He might as well, given how bad Sterling's played, he might as well have taken Theo Walcott. Yeah. Theo Walcott, as bad as he's been, he couldn't have done any worse than Sterling.
In fact, he's probably had a better season.
That's saying a lot. That's
and actually,
but at least,
I'd agree with that. You know,
as you say, Jordan, at least Walcott, if he was one on one with a keeper, I'd think Walcott might score. He might score. Sterling's one on one with a keeper. I got no belief whatsoever. Not even that. I haven't got the belief that even when he's running down the wing, he can actually put a ball in the box. What has he seen?
The craziest thing about Roy Hodgson.
What does he see there? What did he see to think to himself, this game against Iceland is the game for Raheem Sterling? I don't know what he saw. You know, he's just tried to be too clever. He's changing his team when it doesn't need to be changed against Slovakia, right? England aren't that good, right? So just stick with the team that has got you to win against Wales, right? And get this and get your win against Slovakia. Don't start trying to be clever. Don't start trying to be like Pochettino. Oh, well, Pochettino, he changes his fullbacks every once in a while. So I'm going to do the same. No, Roy, you're not Pochettino, okay? Keep with the fullbacks you've got. Keep the team that you've got that won the game against Wales. Keep the spirit high. Win the game against Slovakia.
Don't mess around.
And then start messing around. Or even better, right? There's no reason for you to mess around because the fact is, after the Slovakia game, they had a nice rest. They had a long enough rest for those players to get, you know, to get themselves back up the speed and ready for the next game. He didn't need to change everything, but he's made 6 changes against Slovakia. Then he's made more changes against Iceland. And you're just looking and thinking, what are you...
Didn't have a clue, did he?
What are you doing? Why are you doing... Why are you making these changes?
The maddest thing is that the system he was playing was built for wingers.
Absolutely.
How many wingers did he bring with him?
One.
Sterling. And he had the worst season ever. So Townsend, who was in form, and he's a real winger, he doesn't bring. Theo Walker, who thinks he's a striker but really is a winger, he doesn't bring. Players who actually play in these wide positions, he does not bring. So
I think even someone like Zaha would have had a, wouldn't have done any worse than Raheem Sterling. He had a
pushing
decent,
it now, Jordan.
Well, no, honestly, that's how badly I raced. I think it wouldn't have been any worse than Sterling. Do you know what I mean? But I agree. Does anyone, I think it was...
Rashford outperformed Sterling in the tournament.
First of all, Rashford,
in 5 minutes.
Does anyone think that Roy Hodgson forgot he had a third sub?
No,
because he put him on with 4 minutes to go when it was quite clear that he should have come on 10 minutes earlier.
Because I was calling for him in the last 15 minutes, and then I thought, oh, guess like you don't want to do no subs. Yeah. And then next thing you know, oh, they're bringing him on. I'm like, what's the point now?
Yeah. More to the point, you look at that team, the way it finished the game, right? Look at the way it finished the game, and that is the, if you want any more of a clue that there is a manager who's not got any idea what he's doing and he's completely gone off script and lost his way, right? By the end of that game, he's got Sturridge on the pitch, he's got Vardy on the pitch, he's got Kane on the pitch,
Rooney.
He's got Rashford on the pitch, he's got Rooney on the pitch. That's like, I'm sorry, but you're looking and thinking, and you haven't got one, there's not one winger there. No. There's not one winger. You've got all these forwards, right?
No
just
supply.
Running around. There's no system of play.
Still can't
there's
score.
There's no pattern there whatsoever. It's just desperation.
And the
now.
Thing that was more
and
worrying for me was
this
that.
This is just embarrassing.
And the thing that was worrying for me is that it didn't even look like we're going to score a goal.
It's
bad enough you don't score a goal with five strikers. Sure. They didn't even come close to score.
They
hit the post off the line, it came close.
10 minutes,
they didn't even come close.
10 minutes of that second half, you were looking at it and thinking, they ain't going to score. They are not going to score.
My next question,
and more
guys,
to the point, Iceland looked like they were more likely to get a third than England were to equalise.
Was anybody shocked by the result? Think about that question. No. Was anybody shocked by that result?
I tell you what's interesting.
Was you shocked?
When Croatia went out, players were bawling their eyes out, crying. At the end of that England game, the players were just like, they looked kind of like, oh.
They did the usual on the ground.
They did the usual moment of being somber. But actually, I wasn't shocked, and they didn't even look shocked that they lost. It's just so familiar are they to just going on the pitch and assuming because they're on $100,000 a week and they're well rated at home that they are good enough to play this game. When actually playing in tournament requires a lot of intelligence, which I don't believe English players actually have. I think our game is very visceral. It's very pacey. And actually, when it comes to actually thinking about the game and being tactical, we don't do that. We don't teach that, which is why the Italians could have a really ordinary team.
But
because of the way that they're developed, they can play this tactical game and come and kill Spain in a way that we can't even kill Iceland.
Marcus, was you shocked by the result? Was it a shock for you?
Not really. I mean, obviously, I told you I got friends and they was picking Iceland to win just because of they think England are just terrible anyway, and those are the type of games that England lose, where they're expected to win, they either struggle like and just get through, or they lose. Mm. But I mean, obviously, I expected them to beat Iceland.
So it was a shock then.
But it wasn't really a shock in the sense
pre-game,
of
pre-game. Did you think England they'll probably lose this game?
The reason why I wasn't shocked is because all the games England have had, they were having to play against teams that, you know, like to sit back and defend, right? So my whole theory was if they score an early goal, then Iceland are going to have to come out and we've got all this attacking talent that they're going to get dealt with. And lo and behold, Raheem Sterling did the one thing in the whole tournament he actually managed to achieve, fall over, get a penalty. Next thing, we're ahead, four minutes in or something. I was like, oh my God, we got the early goal. Unfortunately, what I didn't realise was that we couldn't defend at all.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as the first attack that had happened to that team, they scored. And you got to look long and hard at Joe Hart, you know. Every time the ball goes low down to the left, man can't save it.
He struggles, and
it's not even like, you know, it's been whipped in really quick and he struggled to get there. It's like, no, he's actually got there.
He got a hand to
touched
it,
the ball.
Yeah.
And still, it's just rolled. And like, what
just chocolate riz. Ollie, was you shocked by the result? Was it a shock for you?
How can you be shocked, John?
So you wasn't shocked then?
How can you be shocked? As I said to you, if England can't break down Slovakia, why would you be shocked about Iceland? Iceland are a well-organised team. They're not mugs. People can talk all they like about, oh, there's only 50 people in Iceland, right? Or however many people in the population is, right? They can talk all they want about, you know, there's only so many players that they've got available to play
11.
For Iceland. You only need 11 players, exactly.
Their national sport is handball.
The point is, you know that, listen, That guy, yeah, what worried me before the game was the manager is a Swede, yeah? And he's never lost to England. Never lost to England. He used to be Sweden's manager. He's never lost to England. Sweden never lose to England. Sweden play very much like Iceland, very organised, 4-4-2. Players who don't get pulled out of position.
They did their homework, but why didn't do his homework?
Players who don't fall for the English tricks. Oh, yeah, you know, if you push up, we'll bring on Vardy. Vardy will just outrun your defence. People don't fall for that stuff. They don't fall for it. You know, you've got to be a bit more clever. Like Simeon saying, you've got to be a bit more intelligent. You've got to use your brain. You've got to find different ways to break teams down. You know, sometimes you'll get an opportunity to outpace the defence. Sometimes you'll whip a ball in and someone will head it in. But at international level, you've got to find different ways to break teams down. And if you haven't got that in your armoury, you're in trouble. You look at the French, right? The French played an absolutely terrible first half against Ireland. Really bad. They come out in the second half. Deschamps makes a few changes, puts Griezmann in behind. Suddenly, France, within 10 minutes of the second half, they're in front. You can't say, you know, it's not even like we were saying a minute ago. It's not even like you're saying, oh, well, you know, England got up ahead of steam in that second half and they looked like they were going to score. France, when they came out in that second half, for 10 minutes, Ireland were under the cosh and you were just like...
It's coming.
Yeah. It's coming. There was never a point in that second half where you were looking, thinking England are building it up here. They never did anything. They didn't have a plan. They had no idea how to break Iceland down. There's no way that you can be surprised that they didn't get a result, because time after time when England have played against Sweden, it's been the same thing. And that guy knows how to play, and it don't matter who's the manager of England, whether it's Roy Hodgson, Fabio Capello, Sven-Goran Eriksson, Kevin Keegan, whoever, right? They know this lot play the same way every time. And apparently the Iceland players, they wanted England. They were like, we want to play England. We knew we could. One of the Iceland players came out, we knew we could beat England. And you believe that? Every country out there in the Euros looks at England
because they're not technical.
We can beat this.
Like what Simeon is saying, they're not technical.
Of them said it. All of them were saying it. Eden Hazard, he was saying, oh, I'm Shane England in the other half. We really wanted to play them in the quarterfinal. Oh, you know that Portugal would have been thinking, we'll fancy we'll England. Them, yeah. We'll have a bit of England. Do you know what I mean?
When you see players unable to play two-touch football, they can't control the ball, passes are going astray. If you can't do the basics, then you can't build up play. You can't get the little triangles going on. And that was
a worrying thing for me. It wasn't even necessarily about as developed as Simeon's making the point about intelligent in-game management.
That's hard to defend against.
It's just the basics of being able to know that, okay, I can make a 15-yard pass. I can trap a ball. I can make a good cross.
I didn't actually think their passing was that bad this time. You know,
it was shocking.
In that game, maybe. Match. But in the group games, the passing wasn't so bad. That isn't the problem. The problem is, they just went around and around in circles. They had no idea. The common theme was not so much their passing. The common theme of every game they played, the four games they played, was they had no idea how to break teams down. None whatsoever. It was all this kind of like get up the wing and come backwards and go across and then this way and then that way. They had no idea. Where's the killer pass? Who are you dragging out of position to actually make that pass and then play someone in? We can talk all we like about Harry Kane didn't do anything. How much opportunities did Harry Kane have in his games? Yes, he shouldn't have been on free kicks, and I have no idea why. Because he don't take free kicks at Spurs, so I don't know why.
What was that about?
I don't know whose idea
that
was.
And Hodgson defended that idea as well.
That's what killed it.
He's like, oh, nobody can strike a ball like Harry Kane.
Lana, he came out and said in an interview, I think on 5 Live, after the second game, saying that in training, he's got a really good technique. Because people were saying, why is Harry Kane on free kicks? No. In training, he's got a really good technique.
Man is practicing his knuckleball technique in training. Great for him, yeah. When you pull off the knuckleball technique, it looks amazing. But if he can't do it consistently every time, like guys like Gareth Bale, Ronaldo, no.
Leave it alone. And I said before the game as well, the lack of a set-piece taker would hurt England. There's not one set-piece taker in that team.
You know what? I tweeted, people forget how long. People used to mock David Beckham. That guy carried England for a decade with just one right foot. Yeah. That's all he needed.
Yeah.
And it was either a cross or a free kick. that would save England and get them through to at least the quarterfinals.
There's not one set piece taker. People say, oh, but Dier scored a free kick. Yeah, but he's not a free kick taker. Mm-hmm. In the 18th
minute, I thought his use of the ball was quite weak, to be honest with you.
Dier.
I think in only one or two games was his distribution quite good. But I think in against Iceland, I thought was very, very poor.
Simeon, Gary Neville, where does he go from here now? Because he's flopped at bloody Valencia.
Well, he's been
part of two failed, awful campaigns with England. And I think to myself, he's quite an articulate, intelligent guy from what we see on TV. Either A, we're seeing that, or he's seeing now that talking about it on TV with your fancy touchscreen pads and everything, and your 29 replays and everything, that's one thing. Implementing it in a game is something different. Or do we feel that maybe he just didn't get the say in terms of what they were doing that maybe he probably wanted?
Gary Neville's going back to Sky Sports, going back to punditry, all these ex-England players.
Now as well, because he's been tarnished quite heavily.
And then I thought,
as a boss and an assistant.
All these former England players who've achieved nothing at that level, I've got a lot to say. Alan Shearer was like, give me the team. I think to my Alan Shearer, you want to manage England? take a seat, man. What are you talking about?
He's,
you know what I'm saying?
Select himself, you know.
I remember seeing it live. I'll talk to them.
And this is the problem. It's just all this arrogance and entitlement. Just humble at yourself and start to learn the game of football, learn systems and begin to think about the game more methodically. I feel that, you know, it's unfortunate because Gary Neville did seem like he had something about him, but he just looked like he hasn't quite delivered.
Can he
has to learn his trade from the bottom up.
In terms of his next move now, let's assume that he doesn't go back to Sky or at some point in the future he wants to go into coaching. Is he going to be seriously tarnished now because of Valencia and England?
I think
because he was part of the World Cup team as well.
I think when you're assistant manager, you can kind of fall into the wings. So I don't think he will be that tarnished by England.
Okay.
But I think Valencia was a big enough failure. And whereas before, maybe if he was lucky, he could have got a newly promoted Premier League side. I don't think you'll get that now.
Okay. Finally, successors. I saw the list of successors this morning, the list. Mm. I almost cried. It was really, really bad.
You've got Southgate on there, isn't it?
He's the favourite. And what I think almost redeems England is that the chief executive has said he's not ruled out a foreigner now. Before the tournament, they were saying it's going to be an Englishman, whatever happens, we're going to England. And now they're saying, well, no, we're not ruling out a foreigner. It might be a foreigner. So that kind of helps in terms of the pool of people they can pick from. Marcus, who do you think is the man to really galvanise this England team? Because it's not a bad team. There's some good players in that team. He just needs the right man to bring it together.
He's dropped you in it, Marcus. God's sake.
No, I'm going to ask all of you.
He's got to answer first. That's the hardest question. I'm telling you.
You can handle it. You can
good luck, Marcus. Good luck, man.
You know what I mean?
You can handle it. Who's the man for you that needs
You know what? Yeah, I mean, I see why people would talking about Southgate and that, because what is he with the under 21 squads? Yeah, and the weird thing about England is when you see the performance of their younger squads, like the under 18s, the under 21s, they actually do well in tournaments. Like, I don't know how many they've won or whatever, but they actually, and obviously they're playing against the other countries and their younger teams. It seems like what happens after 21? Like, you man pressure, get into the national, it's like the that's what I'm saying, it's like the pressure hits them, or maybe the fact that they've broken into their club team, so you know, the money hits them, and they just lose it. It's like when they're in the youth teams, they're competitive with the Italys, the Spains, the, you know, the Holland and Germany. Like, they're competitive with them. Get to the national stage and you can't beat Iceland.
So give me your name. Who's your man that should be? Because they qualify for the World Cup start in 2 months. So you think...
Well, who's even available, man? I don't know.
This is why I'm asking you guys. Who do you think's a person? Who would you think can work at that international level, work with that England team? Who would you... If money's no option, if you could get anybody, who would you pick?
If money was no option?
Yeah, because England...
Get Mourinho, bro. You mad? Jose? Okay.
So if you could get anybody, he would be the person that you would pick to manage England?
Yes, okay. Just because everyone that he picks would be like, oh my God, we're going to win.
Straight away.
Immediately believe they're going to win.
Yeah, but that's not doable, though. He's just taking the Man United job.
Exactly.
You've got to ask, who's actually trying to ascertain,
like, who's available?
It's difficult because a lot of the people they probably would have wanted have recently just been put into posts.
Man, someone needs to go, nah, he won't want to do it, man. His career's on the up.
Who?
My man at Atletico.
Simeone.
Yeah. Yeah, why, exactly. Why would you take that job?
Marcus,
you know what?
Go on.
Throw Harry Redknapp in there.
Oh, wow.
Throw Redknapp in there, bruv. Throw him in there. You know why?
Well, he wants to be thrown in there. Like,
because you know why? Because
I think he's still hurting from 4 years ago.
The thing is, with Redknapp, because of who he is, yeah, they're going to have to get a really good number two that actually knows, you know, tactics and stuff, right? Redknapp is just there to G the breaders up. And it seems like that's what they need, because Roy was just not doing that. Yeah. I just want to, at least, even if you're, even if the tactics are rubbish, I need to see some motivation on the pitch, you know. And that's the only guy I can think of right now. All right,
Redknapp, Oli.
No, ask Simeon first.
No, I'm going to you next. Who would be your pick? Harry's in the mix. Who's your pick?
I can't even. You know what, Jordan? I'm not even sure I care.
No one cares, but come on. Humour me.
It's just so.
England is the man that can really.
England's
beyond repair.
Anyone can do anything. I think it's a mess. I don't think that in this country, right, they do not take the national team seriously. They don't take it seriously in this country. They don't care about it. In Germany, they care about it. They, you know, the Bundesliga and the national team, they work hand in hand. It's a big deal out there. You know, it's a big deal for Spain. It's a big deal for France. In this country, they don't care about it. Who wants to go into a job where, you know, the managers at the clubs hold the whip hand? They're the ones who are basically telling you, yeah, you can have that player, but make sure you bring him off at half time, yeah? That's what you're dealing with. Who's going to want that job? Nobody wants that job. And then on top of that, you're going to have to deal with all the pressure you're going to be put under by the press. You don't get those players for as much time as you need to actually work with them and get them to work in a system of play. Because half the time, you've got managers turning and saying, well, nah, we don't want that player again. Or no. You know, why are we having this friendly? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? You know, that's the way it is. What top manager in their right mind? Obviously, there's the money issue, right? But seriously, you look at someone like Sven, he loved the pound note, yeah? He loved the pound note. He couldn't believe his luck when he got the job, yeah? Then they got Capello. Capello was at the end of his career. He was just doing it. It was like something to payday.
Wenger's in the mix, you know?
You know what I mean?
I heard that as well.
I don't see... Why is Wenger going to... He doesn't need the hassle. What's he... You mean to tell me, right, that Wenger, after how many years of it, Arsenal...
They've approached him twice, apparently. He's turned it down.
All these years at Arsenal, where every week, when the season starts, you watch it all kicking again, right? Within weeks of the season. So, Arsenal, why haven't you bought this one? He's going to be on the hook, right, from day one. You think he's going to leave Arsenal, where he's been on the hook for years now from the press? Arsenal, why have you done this? Why don't you do that? You know, should you leave now, Arsenal, right? He's going to leave that so he can go and take the England job. I just don't see that. Funnily enough, on the radio the other day, I heard Darren Goff say that Rafa Benitez should get the job. He wouldn't be a bad call, I suppose, because all he's doing is managing Newcastle in the Championship. I mean, seriously.
I think that's he might take it as well.
Yo, that is a good shout.
That's the sort of job that you think
get
to yourself.
Rafa
there. I actually think...
He could do it at the same time. He ain't even got to leave Newcastle.
I actually think that's a good thing, because seriously, it wouldn't be a stretch for him to think, you know what, I know I signed a contract, but sorry, this is a better job. I got to leave. You know what I mean? And that would be, you know, and he loves the country. He could do a job.
Well,
and he's a man who don't take no bullshit. He don't take nothing from players. He don't want to be their mates, because I think Roy wanted to be everyone's mate. He don't want to be anyone's mate. He is straight down the line. He gets the job. And as we said on a previous pod a long time ago, he's a top manager. He's a top manager. He's been there. He's won everything. He knows this country. He knows the players. He'd be a good choice.
How about Bilic?
Bilic is a good young manager.
If England approach, Bilic would take it.
I don't think Bilic would take it, but he's a good top manager. I think Benitez is probably a good shout, but for me, I don't even think they should be looking at managing just the national men's team. I feel like they need to be looking at how they develop players with just awareness of their position and how to actually play different formations and how you play and develop. I think that's the issue.
Of course, but bearing in mind, the qualifiers are in 2 months. They need a guy now. So I agree that there's a wider problem with how players are being groomed.
But I think that needs to be now. That's the priority. I mean, obviously Brendan Rodgers had just gone to Celtic, but he wouldn't have been a bad shout. Hiddink is free right now, isn't he?
Yeah, but
I mean, and Hiddink does like a national tournament, you know.
He bombed with Holland, they didn't qualify because of him.
But my understanding is that the tournament before last,
the first time he was there,
I mean, he took him to the finals, didn't he? Wasn't the finals quarterfinals? Was the semifinals? Was it?
They got to the World Cup final under not him. It was under the other guy. It wasn't him.
Okay.
It wasn't him. But he's been there twice. I think the first time, you're right, he got to like maybe a quarters or something. But the last time, I think that he's on the end of his career, and I think he's on the way out. But you would say, you know, Benitez is not a bad shot.
I think Benitez is probably a good move. Mm. I think that's probably a good move for them.
Okay, all right.
I don't see Bilic going, bearing in mind that, you know, West Ham are moving into this new stadium. They're on the up. Mm. They're prepared to spend money. I think he's going to look at it and think, no, I'm on a good thing here. I want to just stay doing this job. I don't see Bilic going.
Klinsmann, I heard his name being mentioned.
That's a no-no. Klinsmann's wife's American. Klinsmann's wife's American. That's why he's there. Yeah. He lives in America.
And I think when he was Germany boss, I think he lived in America. Yeah, then as well,
and he was commuted from America. It's not going to work. Yeah. Klinsmann is not going to. That's not happening. I don't see that happening.
All right, another reminder, guys, to subscribe and share the pod, Football Fans Podcast, via the iTunes library. Find us on Twitter, FFP_11. Right, let's move on now, away from England. Simeon, the new format of the European Championships, do you feel that Portugal and how they've progressed through the tournament is an example of why the new format doesn't work? Or do you feel that the way the Republic of Ireland have got through the tournament is an example of why the tournament is the new change of the format is a good idea?
I mean, it's interesting because generally I feel like the competition has been quite competitive. So whereas maybe in World Cup tournaments, you see sometimes you just see a team get banged 8-0 or 5-0, and there's a huge disparity between teams.
No one's got touched so far.
That hasn't really happened until this round, where actually the teams are more equal. So that's quite surprising. So, you know, you see good examples. You see Italy beating Spain 2-0, which is quite rare. But generally, I think that the competition hasn't, the way the new tournament hasn't diminished the quality of the teams, not much, because probably because the qualifiers are quite intense and there's actually quite a lot of teams who want to be in the European championships. So I don't think the new format has diminished quality that much.
Okay, Marcus, do you feel that the opening up, because the criticism was initially with the change that you open it up, you're going to get all these back quarter teams that just basically just come from nowhere and they just get battered 5-0. Do you feel the quality generally, have you been impressed with the quality of the tournament so far?
Well, to be fair, I feel like, I don't know, it kind of feels like the real games hadn't really started until we got to the last 16, to be honest. I mean, the group stages, it got confusing trying to work out who was going to be going through. And then there was a good few
confusing
games.
Confusing or exciting?
Confusing, bruv. Like, I was looking at the wall chart, just, nope. No idea who they're going to be playing next. And then the other thing is as well is the format resulted in a lot of dead games towards the end of the group stages where...
I disagree.
Teams who were just... not really, like, you know, if they were both through, they weren't trying to. I think the only team that actually did anything in one of those games was I think it was actually Iceland when they were playing Austria. But all the other teams were just
Ireland. Then this is the reason why I think the format is good, because the third game of the group isn't dead. You can be on 0 points going into your third game and still qualify. So
but that was the only game where I feel like I had a moment like that, where I was like, you know. But at the same time, did they really deserve to be having that moment? No.
So you think Portugal qualifying with... They've not won a game, Portugal, yet in 90 minutes.
This
they
is what
three
I'm
draws and won a game in extra time. So do you feel that the opening up of the tournament is a bad thing?
I mean, I think there's optimum numbers that you can have for the tournament. That's why 16 just worked, because it breaks down better. The 24 don't break down correct. That's why you had the weirdness of trying to work out third place teams and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, I like, you know, it being inclusive, and I like the fact that we get more games, so it's on longer. But now we've got, like, this whole week where we was all, you know, in football mood, and now we're just chilling, waiting for matches to start. It's like, yo.
You've got to calm down now.
Like, I'll put on the TV thinking there was games, and there was, that's the same, my wall chart has failed me, bruv. I don't know what's going on.
Ollie, have you been impressed with the quality and the standard of football generally, or do you feel like... you know, with certain teams in the competition, it has slightly watered down the level of competitiveness and quality?
No, I think it's been a decent Euros. I know they're going to probably say there haven't been enough goals, but I actually think it's been quite good. I mean, teams like Hungary, I've been quite surprised by it. I wasn't expecting much from them, But I thought they did quite well up until they played Belgium. Austria a real disappointment. They didn't really show at all, did they? But I think it's been great. Ukraine were awful, but I think it's been good, the format. The fact that three teams can go through, there's still stuff to play for right to the end. I totally agree with Marcus that it was really confusing at the end who you're going to play, and it must be awful.
That's quite exciting, personally. Well, no. Like, you don't know what day you're playing on and who's playing
it must be awful for the teams. I mean, Turkey had to hang around just to find that Ireland scored that goal. They had to hang They had to hang around for like 2 days and then, waiting for all these games to be played and then to find that they're out like 5 minutes before the end of Ireland's game. They must be thinking, we're through. And then Brady ruins it for him. So I don't think that's...
It's true. No one's talking about Turkey's play. I didn't even know about that.
I don't think it's ideal that you're just sitting in a hotel room waiting to get knocked out. It's like, when you want to know when you're out. You know what I mean?
So I think that's part of the excitement. It's like,
it's not exciting if you're a Turk.
Well, no,
if you're
Turkey, for me, the fan, it's really exciting because like that bit of suspense.
Listen, the Ireland thing, you wouldn't miss the Ireland situation because, to be honest, that was one of the moments of the tournament, wasn't it? The way they won that game 5 minutes from the end, and you know the fan, the celebrations at the end of the game, it was fantastic. So I don't begrudge them that. I think it's great that three teams can go through. And you know we all want more football, so I haven't got a problem with it. I think it's good, but it's not perfect. But it's okay. It works, I think, and it's good to see all these teams. It's good to see where teams are at the moment. Mm. You know.
All right. I said before the tournament, with pod that you were on about 3-4 weeks ago, that you lot call me boring. I was looking forward to seeing defenders and defensive midfielders and seeing who comes through, because I'm looking at my team, Arsenal, and thinking we could do with a good defender. Anyone I don't know about, it's a good chance to kind of scout some players that maybe...
You got a good defensive midfielder now, haven't you?
Well, we have now.
Who misses penalties?
We have. Oh God, we have now. But pre-tournament, it wasn't confirmed. The strikers, there's been a criticism of the top strikers. I've got Lewandowski, Ibrahimovic, Kane, Giroud, Muller and Mandzukic haven't really turned up. Is that a slight on the strikers, or do you think the defending has been particularly impressive?
That's the strikers, to be honest with you. I mean, Lewandowski's had chances, good chances. Yeah, one of them I remember he put over the bar.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think it's just a lot of times big players don't always turn up in these competitions. I think that's quite a trend.
So you think generally the fact that the majority of the top lane strikers haven't scored any goals yet, that's a slight on their finishing rather than the defending's been just too good?
I don't think the defending has been that supreme. I mean, you've seen games where you do get great examples of class defending, like Italy versus Spain, where you just saw top quality defenders taking the initiative and having an advantage. But I mean, if you look at the game against, if you look at maybe like England versus Slovakia, I mean, I don't see that as great. I don't see that as great defending. I see an ability of the forwards to move and to play well. So I think that actually a lot of attacking players haven't quite come to the party. I don't think that defending has necessarily been that supreme, apart from in a few cases, or like Iceland, for example, they've been quite good defensively.
Iceland and Italy down as two teams that I've been very impressed, because we had Gabriel on the pod about 6 months ago. I forgot what we were talking about. I think we were defending actually in the Premier League. And he made the good point, that there's a difference between putting 11 men in the box on the goal line to try and stop a goal going in, and a team that actually is defensively set up and drilled to know what they're doing and where they're meant to be. And I feel that I've watched Italy quite a lot in this tournament, and it's really enjoyable watching. Every single player knows where they're meant to be. Everyone knows what their job is. They know as a unit where they're meant to be moving. And I think to a lesser degree or a certain degree, Iceland are the same. They've been really, really impressive. They've not just been, 11 men in the box on the goal line, try and get the ball past us. They've been defensively quite cute. And I think other teams are showing examples. Hungary, for example, as well. I think there was a Germany game, one of the Germany's game, where defensively I thought they were quite impressive. Have you been impressed with any particular examples of defending, or did you think it's been a bit so-so?
I mean, as you said, Italy, always impressed by Italy's organisation. You know, this is probably the least capable team that they've put out in a competition that I've seen in a long time. And yet they from the first game against Belgium, their organisation was just top class. I love watching the Italians play. You know, you really got to work at it. And, the way they beat Spain the other night, I know Spain aren't the Spain that we saw, you know, back in 2008, 2012. But, yeah, they just, you know, they did a job on them. They did. It was a masterclass, wasn't it? They did a job on them, you know what I mean? And that's more than the case of... More than the case of defence or whatever. It's just organisation. You've got to admire that level of organisation, and I think that is great. And to be fair, I mean, you were talking about Portugal the other night, but Portugal went and did a job against Croatia. I mean, people were saying, you know, when it looked like it might be Portugal that England might play, people were saying, oh, well, Portugal aren't that good, and... Listen, Portugal would have beat England. There's no two ways about it.
I believe that too.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If Portugal had to play England, they would have beaten them. There's no two ways about it. And, you know, no matter how poorly they played in the group stage, and whatever you think about Portugal, you might say, oh, well, Portugal haven't won a game in 90 minutes. But they did a job on Croatia. They did a job. You know, before that game, in the group stage, everyone was saying Portugal, oh, well, you know, they can't defend. You know, the goals they conceded against Hungary, oh, they can't defend. But when they were up against a serious opposition in Croatia, suddenly they pulled out a defensive performance. They brought Fonte in the team, Cedric from Southampton as well. Suddenly they looked solid.
And this is why, Marcus, why I said that I've actually been impressed with the defending in this tournament, because the two games that have been mentioned, Spain, Italy, Portugal, Croatia. Hmm. Croatia against Portugal and Spain against Italy weren't rubbish. They were, from an attacking point of view, they were good, but they were just kept out. You know what I mean? I don't think it was a flaw on Croatia's attackers or Spain's attackers. I just think it was more that those two teams, Spain Italy and Portugal, were just defensively just very, very impressive. Have you been impressed with the defending and in the striking? What's been your view on both aspects of the tournament so far?
Well, definitely, Italy, they've always been good at defending anyway, and it's just like they're just demonstrating everyone, it's like a how-to class. They're like, watch us, this is how you do it. Like, players need to, you know, if someone goes out of position, people fill in, you know what I mean? They don't stray too far from each other, so you haven't got massive gaps between players. It's just simple things, but they do it really well every time.
Germany next. Do you feel that will be the ultimate test? And I think their record in competitions Germany have never, ever beaten Italy in the Euros.
That's the game
or
I really
want
to see, because Germany in their last match, the one thing about them, they don't look amazing, but they are ridiculously, like, I know it's a cliche, but they are really efficient with everything they do. You know, it's like they don't look, there's not hardly any wasted passes. Like, the only guy who seems to waste a pass, because he seems like their most creative spark, is Ozil, because he's looking for the little dinks here and there. Every now and then one will go astray, but everyone else, it's just like, no,
the ball doesn't go astray.
It's only when they give it to Ozil, who 9 times out of 10 does the good pass, but, you know, that 10th one will go astray, and that's when the other team get the ball. And it will be interesting to see how Italy defend against that, because the way their defending is set up is it capitalises on you making a mistake. Like, they're not like, you know, they're not doing no gegenpressing where they're chasing you around, hunting the ball down.
They're just patient
and wait for you to make a mistake. Yeah. Germany hardly make a mistake. So yeah. I want to see how that works.
It should be a good
game.
But
they got Buffon anyway, so... the OG, you know, he's just like, nah, I'm going to play forever. I don't have to run.
Simeon, Italy, Germany. Who are you backing on that one?
The thing is, I'm going to back Germany. The reason why I'll back Germany is because, just like Italy, they're also a tournament team. And secondly, Germany are yet to concede a goal, aren't they?
They've let him one.
Against two.
Didn't Ukraine score against them?
No.
So they're yet to concede. I mean, Italy can score. They have scored. Yeah. But I wouldn't sort of say they're a team that actually have loads of goals in them. They're a team that plays a very particular system. And I think against Germany, a team who have a good defensive system and can also score goals and a lot of creativity in them, I think they'll find their match.
Okay. Ollie, quickly, Italy, Germany. Germany were your tip pre-tournament, weren't they?
They were, yeah, but I like the way Italy are playing. I'm going Italy.
Okay, I think it's going to
be that game as well. I think they're the form team in the tournament. And I hate to say this, but
I really like the way Conte has set his team out, and I think he could be a big player next season.
We're going to do Conte on the pod next week. We're going to get a Chelsea fan on to talk about Conte, but yeah, he's been very impressive. Okay, before we go on to our final topic, guys, I just want to do a shout out to any listeners, of supporters, fans of Swansea or Hull. I'm looking for a Swansea or a Hull fan to come on the FFP next season. We can do it via Skype. We can do it any way you want to do it, but we really need, I've got every fan sorted in the Premier League next year, apart from Swansea or Hull. So any Swansea or Hull City fans, holler at us and get in touch. We'll get you on the FFP during the new Premier League season. Let's talk now about another tournament that's just finished, the Copa America. Start with you, Simeon. Won by Chile again, beating Argentina again in the final. Messi announced his retirement after the game, said that he's retired from international football.
Now, that seemed to be quite an emotional response there. I wasn't sure if it was really a concrete, well, I'm retiring, or rather, I just haven't been able to win anything.
I think it was quite official
decorated
in terms of,
with Argentina.
I think it was what was reported as being an official statement from him, but we'll see if he does kind of.
I mean, he's 29 years old. I think in this day and age, where
it's
footballers
time to come back, isn't it?
I mean, footballers have never been healthier, which is why you have Ibrahimovic, you know, still playing very well at, you know, 35. Mm. So I mean, next World Cup is in 2 years' time. He'll be 31, and I do think that to be peak.
We'll get to what now for Messi, but I want to ask a question: do you feel that he cannot be regarded as the greatest footballer that's ever lived until he wins a major competition?
I don't agree with that in the slightest.
Why not?
Firstly, unlike maybe Wayne Rooney, who everyone called world class, I mean, Messi has actually dragged Argentina to finals. They haven't won them, but he's performed well enough at that level to at least drive his team on to be there or thereabouts.
He's lost. He's been a loser.
I mean, he's lost. That's problematic. But I still consider, if you look at his goals to games ratio, his performances for his club and his country, he's broken. He just equaled Batistuta's record of goals for Argentina. This is a great player by everything else.
Great player, but the greatest.
I mean, the greatest player will always be a conversation. Even people are still disputing, is Ronaldo a greater player than Messi? I mean, these things are ongoing conversations.
So, what, in your view, who is the greatest footballer of all time?
I mean, it's hard because people play in different eras. I mean, these things are really good debates. But I think the players that you have to count in that are Ronaldo or Messi, and then you maybe even throw in Maradona. You know what I'm saying?
Throw in Maradona.
Maybe you'll throw in Maradona. You might want to throw in Pele. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think
pound for pound, probably the most complete player probably is Lionel Messi.
Okay, that's fair. Marcus, can Messi, he's not saying it, but can other people lay claim to him being the greatest footballer to ever play the game if he's not won a World Cup or a Copa America?
It's a prerequisite, far as I'm concerned, just because so many of the great players have one of those titles. You look at man like Zidane, got everything. You know, you got the guys like Pele, got everything. You know, Ronaldinho, got everything. Like, how is it that you can't get this one thing that so many other players who you're meant to be greater than have achieved? And you can't say it's because you're not in a good team.
Yeah, but Jimmy Traore has a Champions League medal. I mean,
yeah, but he's not in the conversation. I'm talking about the actual players that are in the conversation. That's one of the trinkets that you should have, especially when you're in a team that can feasibly win it. He ain't playing for England. You know what I'm saying? And the worst thing is, you're getting to finals, and in the clutch moment, you're the guy that messes up. He missed the first penalty. Like, that's the thing, it's on you. That's what kills it.
I think he missed the penalty in the Copa America.
Don't get me wrong, he's
well.
An amazing player, but I feel like, and the thing is, I feel like that's why I was upset that he announced his retirement, because I'm like, you're gonna win it. It's destined. Because of the fact that the Argentina team is good enough, you're gonna, like, just go to the next World Cup.
Well, didn't I think when he announced his retirement, I think Higuain, Di Maria, Mascherano, and Rojo, but no one cares about him. I'm sure they all announced their retirements as well.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, that was because he was saying, I'm done. Yeah. And if you're in a team with Messi and you're like, you're done, well, we ain't going to win now, are we? If we couldn't win with him, we ain't going to win without him. We're done. Let the youngsters do it. And it's just like, he basically, that's what I'm saying. No, you shouldn't be giving up.
So who would be the greatest player of all time for you?
Of all time?
Yep.
Well, like you say, and obviously different areas and stuff. So I'll just go by what I saw, because I didn't get to really see the Pelés and the Maradonas and the Cruyffs and all that. So the greatest player I ever saw, I'll go with Zidane.
Ollie, can Messi ever have a claim to being the greatest player ever to play the game if he's not won a major tournament with his country?
Of course he can. The game's changed now, isn't it? The game's not... It's not the same game as it was back in the day where you had to win World Cups and whatever. Let's be honest. International football isn't as... It isn't as good as club football, is it? You know, winning a Champions League now takes more than winning a World Cup. It just happens. If you're lucky enough to play in a team that has a breed of, you know, of good players who all come through at the same time.
Which he is.
Which, you know, then you're lucky. Well, he's never really been in a top team because Argentina have had a lot of good attacking players. They've never had a good defence while he's been in a team. And
Outdone by Chile.
Yeah, but they've been done 0-0. They've both been 0-0.
That's
games
what I'm saying. Penalty. You're meant to be the greatest. But that's the game you turn around, aren't I?
But, listen, you can lose games. It happens. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is that Argentina, they've never had... Not only have they not had great defences, but they've not had a top manager either, ever, in the time that Messi's been... I mean, at one point, they had Maradona as manager, and the man's a lunatic. You know, great player, but how he was ever manager of Argentina is just a joke. So, you know, that's what you're dealing with. And now they've got the guy who was at Barcelona, right? Now, he lost last year to Chile, and now he's lost again. He shouldn't be a manager of Argentina. He's got to go. So, you know, that to me, I look at that and think, well, you know, you can't base every... The thing is, Messi, I read something the other day, and it was quite a good article, but it was basically saying that people always say with Maradona, oh, he won the World Cup on his own in 86, but he actually had a couple of good players with him in that team. You know,
I looked at like that as well. I thought about that.
Valdano and people like that. And Messi, you know, time after time, he's played in World Cup last year. Higuain should have scored in that final. He missed a great chance. I mean, Messi missed a great chance in the final against Germany as well. He should have scored. Mm. But Argentina had chances in that final to win that game, and they blew it. But I don't. But getting
so
back
first with you, though, it's not a must that he has to have not won in the,
not in
a
the,
world
not not in the
considering
modern,
that the people listen, in the conversation it'd be nice, as Marcus said have
it'd be nice it'd be well who are we talking about
well the Pelés they've won a World Cup
yeah but that's what
Maradona's
I'm saying yeah but that's
Cup.
What I'm saying to you
the Champions League is the new World Cup
yeah but that's what I'm saying yeah what I'm saying to you is this is the modern game is it's not the same anymore. It's not like the old days where it was like, yeah, you got to win a World Cup to be considered the greatest player. Them days are gone.
So
do you know
think
what I mean?
He's the greatest player of all time.
Oh, I don't know. It's one of those questions, isn't it? Is this player better than that player? I don't know. Different eras, you know what I mean?
Of course it is. Everyone's a different era.
Personally, like Marcus, I never saw Pelé. I didn't really see Cruyff. Maradona's probably the best player I've seen. Because the thing is, Messi's great, right? There's no two ways, but Messi's great. But Messi didn't have to deal with people kicking him up in the air every 2 minutes and ripping his shirt and doing the sort of things that used to go on back then. You had to, you know, to really be able to show your talent, you had to deal with people assaulting you on the pitch, you know. And Maradona actually did that, and not just that,
but Napoli as well.
What I was about to say, Maradona won the championship in Italy, which was then the toughest league in the world, probably the most defensive league with the most ruthless defenders, and he won the title for them. You know,
one season though.
Napoli had never won a title.
Yeah, Napoli weren't a big boy back then.
Napoli weren't a big club. Napoli was
Leicester.
Yeah, it was an incredible achievement. But the point is, I think he's probably the better player, Maradona. But
you don't link the two of having to have the complete
but I don't
set
think,
of trophies
I don't think,
for you to be in that conversation.
Yeah, you can't. Okay. You can't. I don't think that you have to look at Messi and say, "Well, you're not one of World Cups, you can't be considered." Because I just don't think the modern game. I don't think it works like that anymore.
A couple more. Why do you think he's retired? Why do you think he's decided that I'm done?
Well, apparently there's lots of confusion and I don't know what's going on. There's a lot of business with the Argentinian FA that he's not happy with. And he's promised to reveal what it is that he's not happy about. but there's something going on there that he's just said is a joke, and he's not happy with the way it's run. Maybe he doesn't like the manager, Martinez. He probably thinks, well, you know, this guy's not got it or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Because he had him as a manager at Barcelona and he only lasted a season, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
So maybe he doesn't like the manager. He doesn't. The FA are in a shambles because I think FIFA had to jump in because they had some election, didn't they? And they had an election for the new leader of the Argentinian FA, and FIFA had to jump in because it was all corrupt or something like that anyway. So he's not happy with the FA. He's probably not happy with, you know, the way things have gone. And maybe there's a lot of pressure on him as well that he doesn't need. He comes into the Argentinian thing. He travels all these miles. Yeah. After a while, it takes its toll because, you know, you have to leave. He has to leave Spain, go over and play in Argentina, and then fly back to Spain and play for their Barcelona at the weekend. After a while, that takes its toll. He's 29 years old. He's probably thinking to himself, you know what?
I'll give it a good run.
I can't do this anymore. But I don't think it's the last of it. I think he'll play again.
Simeon, why do you think he can't replicate his form for country from his club form?
I mean, I don't think that's fair because I've seen Messi win many a game for Argentina and take his country quite far.
But I've seen him win finals for Barca. Finals for Argentina.
In a way that, you know, our supposed top players have never raised their game to even beat Iceland. I've seen Messi be able to open doors. So, I mean, I don't quite think that's fair.
He did win a few games for them that got them to the 2014 final, Jordan. I don't think you're being fair.
He's won finals.
He doesn't have to win the final. The point is, what I'm saying, he got them to the final. You know, if it wasn't for him, they probably wouldn't have got to the 2014 final.
I remember the thing about the final is that's where the pressure is.
That's what I was going to say.
I remember against Switzerland, wasn't it his ball that he put through for, you know, Maria. For Di Maria's goal? I remember the last minute free kick that he scored to get in one of the group games. He scored quite a few goals.
As Marcus is saying, a lot of other good players have good tournaments, but when it really matters in the final, I think he's lost 4 finals now of Argentina. That's not a good record. And when it really matters, I'm wondering why you can be the difference in a Barcelona team that gets to a final.
That's what I'm saying. How can you drag them all the way to the final and then that final game you can't perform? And then it's consistently the case as well.
He's not the only player on the pitch.
No, of course not. No, but we're talking about the greatest players of all time. So it's an individual thing we're talking about. So quite similar. I'll cut you off, sorry.
Well, Barcelona is a better side. Firstly, this is the better side where you've got decent defence, man like Xavi, you had man like Xavi, now you got man like Iniesta, Rakitic, you know, Suarez now, back in the day, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just a better team, isn't it? Plus he's been there 12 years and every year he's competing at the top level. These championships only come up every so often. But I don't think it's entirely fair because I don't buy the idea that Messi doesn't play well for his country.
I never said that. I said, why can't he replicate his form for his country?
I mean... The margin.
His form, what do you mean?
In the moments that matter.
It's tight margins, though, isn't it?
Of course it is, especially when. He finds those tight margins for Barcelona.
The last two Copa Americas lost in penalties. You know what I mean? It's fine margins, isn't it? It's very, very fine margins. But I do expect him to come out of retirement for the next World Cup. And who knows what will happen then.
Okay, all right, guys. Some of you might not care, but the whole coverage and media angles and the coverage of football games I find quite interesting. So indulge me. Let's do a very quick pundit watch across the Euros. I want to get you guys' views on the coverage of what you've seen so far across the BBC and ITV. Has everyone been relatively pleased with how it's been reported, commentated on? Pundits' views and opinions. Anyone?
Ian Wright made me laugh. You know, and he got all emotional after that England game.
I think he got emotional because he's one of the few pundits that actually pre-tournament was really kind of like, get off the boys' back. They're really, really good. They could do something. And I think it made him look stupid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He was angry. I think that was the best. That was one of the best things I saw in the whole thing, just because you needed someone to say that. And it's just like, and watching him struggle to not swear as well. You can see him going through his mental vocabulary like, no, I can't. They were they were rubbish. And it's just like, well done, Ian.
He saw the camera well done, his eye for, well yeah, I better hold his
down.
You
can see it was there, and then he just, nope, rubbish.
Commentators, a lot of people I know have not been really happy with the likes of Martin Keown and Jonathan Pearce.
I tell you,
commentator on the big game is really poorly.
The funniest thing was Henri's face when they asked it, when they were talking about his handball against Ireland. That was funny. That's gonna be a meme. I tell you, ITV, I think when that BBC's coverage has been better than ITV's coverage. ITV, their level of bias on ITV towards the home teams is outrageous. So, I mean, I think there was a moment where a player did like an outrageous kind of foul. He didn't touch the ball. They're like, oh, great tackle. I just thought to myself, you what? Are you crazy? But
was that just a one-off bad call, or do you think they were doing that because it was a home nation?
Generally, they are biased, aren't they? I mean, they support their boys.
And is that a problem? Do you feel that the home broadcaster should be allowed to have that little flexibility to back the home nations, or do you think they should just be completely impartial?
I mean, obviously, you're never going to be entirely impartial, but don't say that a foul was a great tackle because that's simply not true.
Okay, Ollie, have you been? What you thought of the made up the coverage and the reporting?
You know
commentating?
What? I just feel like the a lot of the presentation and the punditry's kind of passed me by really, because it's got to that point now where I'm just quite happy. There's so much football that it's quite easy to, you know, because it's back to back. It's quite easy to just think, you know what? I don't need to listen to them. I'll just
go and wash up, come back in 10 minutes.
Exactly. I just come in for the football because I can't be listening to Rio. I can't listen to Rio. You know what I mean?
You
I can't.
Put a couple of weeks ago that said the same thing. I think Rio's actually been quite good. No, what's your issue with Rio?
No, he's just having him. He never says anything.
I tell you who I do like
though. Anything of any note.
Do you know who's alright though? Jermaine Jenas is alright. You know,
Jenas is good.
Jermaine Jenas, you know,
yeah, he's improved over the years actually.
We like him on the.
I don't mind Jenas at all. I think Jenas is good, but Rio's always trying to say something profound, and it's like, mate, you ain't got it. You just ain't got it. Do you know what I mean? You're never going to be
you
Gary.
You seen Jermaine Genius is like, I could do that,
never
man.
Gonna
and
be Gary
I'm
Neville.
Rio. Do you know what I mean? Who's
you're
he?
You're never going to be Gary Neville. You know what I mean? He just can't do it. And, you know, and to be honest with you, I watch Shearer. Shearer's head bobbing all over the place when he gets angry, right? And it's just like, and he's just... Listening to him, right, you just think it's like the last 20 years didn't happen. We should just play 4-4-2. We get two forwards out on the pitch. He's just like, Alan, the game's moved on, mate. You know what I mean?
Alan Shearer is the worst. I mean, it shows you why some of these ex-players bomb at management. Because you think to yourself, you were so good on the pitch, yet you have no clue what's actually happening.
And as you guys were saying earlier, like when he's saying he's putting his... I'd do the England job. I'm sure you would, Alan, but it doesn't mean you can do it. Do you know what I mean?
I saw an interview with him and he's like, I back Neville because I ain't even got all the coaching badges
well
and that yet.
I
got two
it.
Of them.
I might as well say, oh, well, you know, I'd like to do the England job. It'd be great. It doesn't mean I can do it, you know? It's like, Alan, if you really want the England job... Go and do it. Go and manage somewhere.
And then he started criticising the FA for not giving him the job. He's like, you know, four years ago, yeah. I went to them and I told them, I can do it. I can do it. And they were like, I didn't have experience, but I can do better than that. And they gave, you know, why don't they involve us ex-players? I think, well, they do involve you ex-players. Gary Neville was there. I mean, they bring you guys through all the time and you never deliver. Kevin
Keegan.
You
know what's funny though? Remember when they was all laughing at the Iceland commentator? The other week when he was getting all hyped, like, in the words of Farage, boy, you're not laughing now.
He's still working.
Exactly. He's still getting gassed, boy. He's like, we're playing France.
Has the coverage across BBC and ITV, because it sounds like it's all been a bit meh for you guys, has it highlighted how good Sky's punditry and how good Sky's level of coverage is?
No, because to be honest, I haven't missed Sky at all. I haven't, I don't think to myself, oh, I wish Sky were doing this. I don't think, you know, what's quite nice about it is that the level of access is quite good. You know what I mean? It's all free to air and I quite like that. You know what I mean? So it's quite easy to follow stuff. And I have to say, by the way, radio coverage has been fantastic. I do like the radio coverage, and Five Live have had some really good journalists on. Guillaume Balaguer's been on there. and they've had, you know, Honigstein and Julian Laurens and all that, and they've actually given a level of insight that I think, yeah, I'm interested to hear what they got to say. Do you know what I mean? Because they offer something. The BBC, when they get the right people in the BBC, it's interesting. So, for instance, the other day, right, and they have Vialli on. Vialli is fantastic.
He's my favourite
pundit.
Vialli
is fantastic. He always gives you a bit of insight into, you know, and this is what Italy were doing, and they would do it, you know, and he actually explains stuff. And, you know, that's what you want. You want someone who gives you insight. I don't want to hear this same old rubbish that people say. I want some insight, and Vialli gives you that. I'm sorry, but Henri still doesn't give me anything really that I just think, yeah, wow. But Vialli gives me a level of technical insight that I find interesting, and I just wish that there were more that people like him on there, more people like Guillaume Balague, who actually talk about the game. I don't want to talk about rubbish. I don't want to hear about...
That's what made Gary Neville's name in the pundit.
Yes, exactly.
The fact that he was just breaking it down, yeah. And he was like, all of a sudden, people were understanding football in a way they just didn't get it before.
Absolutely. Just talk about... Tell me something I don't know. Tell me something that I can't see for myself. Explain the game, you know, unveil something, you know, that's what you want. And I just find so often you're watching the programs and it's just the same old rubbish. And to be honest, Bilic was good for that. Bilic offered excellent. Something when excellent. He was doing, you know, in the early games, Bilic offered something, right? But I'm sorry. And Dixon tries his best as well. Dixon, I don't mind him. So I actually think ITV have been okay, but there's quite a few of them that I don't really have that much interest in, but you know, like Wrighty is Wrighty. You don't get anything from him. Do you know what I mean? But you know, they have had people like Dixon. They have had Petit's not offered anything either. Do you know what I mean? He hasn't really offered anything. But yeah, Dixon and Bilic have been good for ITV, and on BBC, I've liked Vialli. Company, has he offered anything? I'm not really sure if Company's offered anything, because it's just we've got Vincent Company.
It's a name, isn't it?
It's a name, but actually, has he said anything? Not really. Oh. But yeah, I'd say from the BBC, for me, it's been Vialli's been the best on TV, and then the people they've had on radio have been great.
Alright guys, thank you very much for your time this week on the FFP. Don't forget to subscribe via the iTunes library, you know it by now, Football Fans Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, FFP_11. Until the final, we'll probably do a podcast pre the final in a week and a half or whatever, in 10 days' time. Until then, peace.